Dr. Sumner, who we're really pleased that Dan has agreed to present this morning. He's at the University of California Agricultural Issues Centers. He's the director there. He's also a professor in the Department of Agriculture and Resource Economics. He brings an exceptional background. He's spent time at USDA. He's served as chair of the International Agricultural Trade Research Consortium. He's done consulting work for farm organizations, government agencies, firms. He's been a frequent speaker at national and international conferences. He was born and raised on a farm, so he has the very practical, applied agricultural background from that perspective. And he served as the Assistant Secretary of Economics at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. So, Dan, without further ado, I'm just going to turn the program to you.
Yes, I focus on economics of volatility in agricultural markets here, and I don't use the word risk because it's a much more technical and complicated conversation, and we'll get to that after we have something to really look at. The outline and objectives of what I'm going to do in the next few minutes is to make the point that volatility is a natural feature of agriculture, and it's built into the economic system. What I mean by that is anybody in agriculture, and I'll repeat this line several times, anybody in agriculture expects volatility. It comes with the territory. If somebody thinks they can go into agriculture without volatility and risk, or any other business for that matter, it's just not happening. I'm going to show you some price slides in a few minutes. What we know is that prices are an input in the sense that they are an input to a calculation of net revenue. Product prices go along with input prices and production to get us income fluctuation. And we expect income to fluctuate much less than prices and quantities themselves, because prices and quantities tend to be negatively correlated. So in just about every part of American agriculture, unless somebody were off in really outside the mainstream, then what they do is shared with what their neighbors do in the sense of weather and responding to signals. And what that means is that big quantities cause lower prices and vice versa, and we have less fluctuation in income than we have in either prices or volumes. Let's go to the next slide. I just want to make the point that, so here we're seeing unemployment rates seasonally adjusted. These are monthly, just for the last decade. Agriculture isn't the only place where there's fluctuations. This reminds us, as though we needed it here in 2010, that people who work in other businesses also face fluctuations. This is just one signal, of course. Wages also vary, and people can be lose hours of work without being unemployed. But unemployment is the headline, if you will, in macroeconomic fluctuations. We should note that the last 20 years in the United States, actually 25 years, has had less macroeconomic fluctuation than the previous decades. In this sense, we've had much longer periods between recessions than we'd had previously. Of course, we just went through a very deep recession, but if you go back to earlier periods of time, those recessions were much more frequent, and a number of them were deeper. Here's some data that takes the wheat industry. Now we're getting directly to agriculture, and especially a commodity that's important all over Western agriculture. We're going back to 1866 here. This is the natural log in prices, so we've adjusted in percentage terms here. Put in real terms in the sense that it's deflated by the gross national product deflator, the GDP deflator. The fluctuations you see there are essentially percentage fluctuations, and there's a few of them that many of us remember. The mid-1960s, we had a huge jump in prices. In fact, among the largest we've ever seen in percentage terms, that happened very rapidly in the mid-1960s. At that time, a lot of people were saying that was going to last forever. Of course, it didn't, and we got right back to the trend. The other thing to note here, besides the fluctuations, is the long-term trend, and the long-term trend in wheat prices in the United States is clearly down and down quite substantially over really the last half century since about 19, or the last 60 years, since the mid-1940s. We had highs coming out of World War II, and it's been really down since then, with fluctuations around that. Now, 2008, 2009, and again in 2010, we're above our trend line. Will that continue? I don't know. Most people who look at the long-term history say there's no way it can continue. These powerful forces of productivity growth will continue to shift wheat prices along with other agricultural commodity prices mostly downward. By the way, this same picture or something very similar to it would apply to corn or soybeans. For that matter, cotton is very similar in several other commodities. The fruit and vegetables follow a somewhat different path. We're going to get to that in a second. So the two points I use this slide for is to make the point that a fluctuation in agriculture has been going on for a very long time. Percentage fluctuations have been substantial in many periods. And however, the recent fluctuations since, say, the high prices in the mid-90s has been substantial. So we are seeing a period, as most of us intuitively feel over the last decade or so, of substantial amounts of variability in wheat, but that's also true in other commodities as well. Let's stay with wheat for just a few more minutes to illustrate the point. What we have on this slide is the loan rate. So this is just the loan rate. Now, there's no target price here. There's no countercyclicals, none of that. And the point is there are substantial periods where the loan rate was the floor price. Some of you may used to thinking that the loan rate went up or it stayed constant. This is in real terms, in inflation-adjusted terms. And notice we've only gone back, I say only gone back three decades here. The loan rate dropped rapidly. We know that in the first decade, and it's been fairly flat over the last decade, partly because there's been relatively little inflation, and the loan rate has been tended to be fairly flat in nominal terms. Over the last decade, so since about the year 2000, there's been substantial price fluctuation, but it's been well above the loan rate. And as we know, we've shifted towards other instruments, some of which are like direct payments or just income supplements that tend to smooth farm income overall for wheat, and also countercyclical payments, some of which go to people that have grown wheat, that have a history of growing wheat, but of course don't have to grow the commodity now. Going forward, if we just look at production numbers, this is again just the last 30 years, we understand a little bit about what's behind price fluctuations. When you have 10 and 20% production fluctuations from year to year, even with our wheat economy tied into the world market, you're going to have price fluctuations, which is what the next slide tells us. One thing I want to point out here, so what we have here is deviations not from a very long-term trend, but from a three-year moving average. So look back 3 years, how has has this year's price moved relative to the last 3 years? So you see 2009 looks like a big down spike. It was a 20% decline, but from prices that were well above trend. That is 10% up, 20% up in 2007, more than 10% up again in 2008. So that's where we start that decline in 2009. What you see here is up spikes go along, and the down spikes tend to be bigger and more of them, which accounts for the long-term trend. So if somebody's using the last 3 years, say, as where they think the normal prices ought to be, they're going to be caught in the wheat business, and which means people aren't going to believe that. Most people in the wheat business have experience of observing these things, so they know what's going on. Let's dip out of agriculture for just a second to remind ourselves that prices fluctuate in other commodities. This happens to be the one representative oil price over the last decade or so. This is monthly data, which is relevant in that industry as opposed to annual. And there we see an upward trend. What does that mean? That means oil prices haven't had the productivity growth that we've had in agriculture. The downward trends in agriculture tend to be our productivity growth, that is, ours in the United States, and productivity growth around the world. We know that demand is shifting out. Production or supply is shifting out faster. Demand tends to fall. That's built into the system. We know that's happening. I think in the long-term sense, we should expect that to continue to happen, though it depends on real investment. It depends on bringing more productive people into agriculture, more productive than previous generations, and it also means bringing new technologies and new ideas into agriculture. That takes investment. To the extent that we continue to make those investments, long-term prices in agriculture will decline, and long-term prices in some inputs to agriculture, like oil prices, are likely to be continuing to increase. That's been a fact of life for decades now. My guess is it's likely to continue, but it takes investment. So what if we look at wheat, and now I've introduced milk as well, and oil all on the same slide. Wheat prices have certainly been volatile. We've set here in this slide, this is a decade, we've set January 2000 as 100, and prices have fluctuated, and they fluctuated up. These are in real terms just over the last decade. They haven't, the agriculture commodity prices haven't fluctuated as much as the oil prices have, and dairy prices haven't gone up or down as much as wheat prices have over this period in percentage terms, or that is relative to the index. Now, we do see real dairy prices jumping up by 50% and back down by about 25%, so I don't want to underestimate or undersell how much fluctuation there is in dairy prices. And so let's look at that fairly specifically. Here's some milk prices. Milk's the most important commodity in California and in several other states in the western United States, and of course important throughout U.S. agriculture, 10 to 15% of total revenue throughout U.S. agriculture. So milk's something worth spending a little time on. As you see, milk price, this is real milk prices, inflation adjusted. The price support for milk really has been a price support in the sense that it's a government purchase price. This is all milk price, that is what's represented there as milk prices, all milk price, the milk price support applies to class 3 or manufacturing milk, and it's over the last three decades been substantially below where the all milk price has been. If we had the manufactured milk price or the class 3 price, for those of you that follow milk, the price would occasionally dip near the floor, but it's not a surprise that the dairy industry this year, major segments of the dairy industry has said, let's pull the plug on the price support program. It really doesn't do us any good anymore. We need to recognize that that's not an instrument that's doing much for the dairy industry. And this picture shows at least one reason why they believe that. The other thing we can see from this picture is that now we've turned to this three-year moving average again. Let me remind folks what this chart is. This takes the past three-year average prices, real terms, deflated by the GDP, all milk, and then asks, how does the current year deviate from that in percentage terms? And what you can see is milk prices really have become more volatile as time's gone on. People in the dairy business know this. I can't tell you why. In the very early period, up through about 96, support prices mattered. After that, they don't matter very much, and yet still we've had increasing volatility in the milk business, at least in prices. Some of that may be underlying volatility in grain or in feed prices, but there are other things going on in the dairy business, and frankly, that hasn't been studied thoroughly enough that we really know why that is. Me and other people have hypotheses, but it's a fact that the dairy industry is dealing with, that we don't really yet have a good handle on. Let's turn to a few other commodities just to talk through what this means. This happens to be beef prices, and here we see much more in the way of cycles, that is longer-term cycles in the prices. We also see it, of course, in production of beef. And so what I mean by that is 3 or 4 years of up prices. We're now in, up through 2009 anyway. We were in the fourth year of down prices. 2010 is above 2009 after really lousy prices in 2009. You'll also see these percentage prices in beef are not of the same magnitude as we have in the crops. That is, up or down 8% is a lot when it comes to beef prices in real terms. We get bigger fluctuations than that in crops. And here's now I want to turn to a few of the horticultural crops very quickly. Here's the real price of almonds, not down but up. We only have on this slide a decade or so of prices, and we've seen them go up and come back down again. So if we look to the moving average on almond prices, up. So the story on the moving average is well above average for 3 or 4 years, then below average for the last 3 or 4 years. But the big story in the almond business is that prices have been trending up while production's been going through the roof. And that's what this next slide is to make. And so what you've seen production going through the roof and new planting still coming in the almond business. And so the story there for fluctuations is not people worried about year-to-year fluctuations in prices, what we've seen here, or even 2 or 3 years. The question is, can prices stay relatively high given, I'm going back and forth a little bit here, given this very rapid increase in production? Are we ready for a fall in our almond business in the sense of very substantial reductions in prices in a long-term way? And that that general idea is something I think we ought to get think more thoroughly about. When I said agriculture has built in a way to deal with year-to-year fluctuations and even 2 or 3 year cycles, and in some industries like beef, where we expect them to last a little longer, that's built into everybody's psyche and everybody's business plan. But what about prices that go along at a high level for a decade or two and the bottom falls out? And that happens occasionally. There's really nothing anybody can do other than realize that that can happen in the business. That means savings and investment. That means planning for very large potential long-term price declines. And that is, those are periods in which everybody in the business scrambles. Can governments solve those problems? I don't see any way. Governments can contribute to making it worse. There are some very famous cases, the Australian wool debacle from a decade or so ago, where the government kept trying to hold stocks to keep prices high, and finally just couldn't do it anymore, and prices collapsed when the government really had to pull out of the business. So I guess the point I want to make is not that this is likely to happen for almonds. Almond demand growth has continued. It's only that everybody in agriculture has to realize that even against a long-term downward trend, if we see prices well above trend for a while, we ought to realize that it's at least a substantial possibility that prices will be down for several years after we see prices go up. Same's true of the stock market, same's true of oil prices and other things. Wine grapes tell a different story than almonds, and it's also a very important commodity in Western agriculture, Washington, Oregon, California, and other states, and nationally on the East Coast some as well, and some in states like Michigan. What we see for wine grapes is, in real terms, substantial downward trend over the last decade. Flat for a while, then down, then flat for a while, then down again. This is a part of dealing with world markets. Demand has expanded in the New World and in among Northern European wine consumers. I reference you to some work we did on the world wine market in a state of fluctuation that's on our AIC website. But the point here is this is a part of specialty crop agriculture, unlike almonds, where we've lived with substantial downward price declines because of productivity growth in the United States and worldwide. We also know the wine market has lots of very special niches, and so that what I show here is annual U.S. prices of wine grapes. This doesn't tell you what's specifically happening to Cabernet Sauvignon in Napa or Pinot Noir in Oregon. Those markets can operate a little bit more separately from the national trends, which makes a commodity like wine grapes more interesting and more challenging than something like wheat or corn, which tends to move together in national markets. Let me move out of wine grapes, and the last commodity I want to put on the slide is apples, an important commodity throughout Western agriculture and throughout U.S. agriculture generally. Here we see a gradually upward trend over the last 20 years, lots of fluctuations in annual prices of almonds. It's something that the people in the people in the apple business have to be used to. They have to know that's coming. They're going to have 3 or 4 or 5 years below trend, a few above trend, and at least over the last 20 years, we've had gradually increasing real prices of apples. But lots of fluctuation, and notice here we're talking about deviations from the moving average on the upside of 20% or more, on the downside occasionally 20% or nearing 20%, with several years in a row of low prices. This is challenging to an industry. It's built into the industry. And remember, these last few slides, I've shown you industries that aren't dealing with government support prices or government payments in any sort of regular basis. Do they look a lot different than the commodities that have government support? Not really. Are they less healthy industries overall? Not really. And that makes somebody like me, who's been watching this for a long time across a lot of commodities, a bit skeptical that government programs are the answer to dealing with fluctuation for U.S. agriculture. The lettuce commodity is the one representative vegetable, and that's, the last commodity I want to deal with. This shows annual data for lettuce. We know that lettuce producers have several crops a year, which is one way they smooth fluctuations. Very gradual decline in lettuce prices, not statistically significant from zero. Very large fluctuations of 10 or 15% or so from year to year, with bigger fluctuations than that from season to season. It's an industry that deals with contracting, that deals with multiple seasons, and also diversification across crops. So the typical lettuce producer will be in several of the green vegetables, trying to smooth out big fluctuations and also take advantage of seasonality and other things in their industry. Let me stop there and ask if there are questions. I put our AIC website on this slide. We have a background material on some of these issues that's available to everybody, as well as, of course, the website that you were given. We're also putting additional background slides related to this talk on other commodities up on the risk management website that you saw earlier. Let me stop there and see what we have in the way of questions.
Great. Dan, and just to reinforce, there are additional resource materials around these presentations on the Ag and Uncertain Times webpage, and Dr. Sumner has a whole another set of, well, they're incorporated into this to extend the number of slides that are available there. For information, one of the questions that came in from the audience related back to one of your graphs early in your presentation, and the question was, real prices in wheat trended down, but it's not clear that volatility has increased based on this graph in real terms.
That's exactly right, and I will put on We have on our website, and I'll put on the risk management website, some more detail on both corn and wheat. I think I also have soybeans on there. Volatility has been substantial, but it hasn't increased for wheat relative to the long-run period. And notice, we have some well-known episodes in wheat. We have World War One, huge up spike. The Depression, huge down spike. World War Two, an up spike. Then we have the 1970s. I think one thing to recognize is that the current period, this is in natural log, so these are percentage changes we're seeing here in terms of fluctuations. The recent period was a period, that is the last 15 years ago since the mid-1990s, has been a substantial period. It doesn't stand out on this chart, but we've had substantial increases and decreases of the last period. The message I get from this is that anybody in the wheat business knows prices fluctuate. Prices fluctuate a lot. There's no indication that that period has ended. There's no indication from this, if you look at the long swings, that we're out of what would be a long-term trend in price declines. The one thing that would reduce the degree of long-term price declines for wheat is if we lose our productivity growth. And let me use this as a quick advertisement for a point that I think is not dealing specifically with fluctuation, but it's incredibly important for all of us, and that is what's behind long-term productivity growth in agriculture is human capital growth in agriculture, that is better and more productive farmers, attracting people into agriculture because of opportunities to use their own productivity, and also the tools they work with, both biological tools, new seeds, new varieties, new chemicals, and also other technologies, including information technology like we're using here. The idea that a wheat grower, or for that matter, extension a person who's out there talking to growers can be on this website rather than traveling around in a pickup truck really adds to productivity. Oh, we have to keep that going. Otherwise, food prices rise, and the world's a much less productive place than it has been over the last several decades.
I've got one more question now, and then we're going to go to our next presenter, but Dr. Sumner will be with us after we hear from Danny Kleinfelter to answer other questions. And this question is, are you seeing any regional difference in either commodity prices or input prices across the U.S.? Significant differences.
Right. The big differences are across commodities, of course. Across regions, things tend to move together. The one example... So that is to say, wheat prices are relatively national. There are little pockets where the basis may change because of local conditions, say transport costs change, something like that. Some of the fruit and vegetable and tree nut commodities are specialized. Partly they're specialized regionally. Almonds are a uniquely California crop. They're a several billion dollar crop, but they are uniquely California. But when you get something like wine grapes, then you do get very specific regional markets. And we all know that some individual growers have strategies for, in a sense, making their markets more regional. We all know there are growers that focus on local retail markets, farmers markets, things like that. They don't tend to be the biggest parts of U.S. agriculture, but there are ways to make yourself more local. That can also mean you're more vulnerable to local price fluctuations, but some growers have found those useful strategies as supplements to selling into national markets.
Very good, and we'll have some additional questions for you.